We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
From your favorite source for Chicago White Sox talk, delivering news, interviews, analysis, and more. This is the Sox Machine Podcast with your hosts, Jim Margulis and Josh Nelson.
Thanks, Rob, and welcome to the Sox Machine Podcast. I'm your host, Josh Nelson, and it's Wednesday, November 22nd, 2023, as we bring you a new podcast episode. With it being Thanksgiving this week, delivering a new show so we could spend some time over the holidays with our families, unless the White Sox keep making some news. And news has been made. A couple of weeks ago, we told you on this podcast and wrote about it on SoxMachine.com that the Chicago White Sox had approached former Cardinals and Giants shortstop Paul DeJong. Thought process was to sign DeJong to a short-term contract so that when Colson Montgomery arrived, the White Sox would transition to whom they believe will be an impact shortstop in Montgomery. Well, on Tuesday, November 21st, John Heyman of the New York Post tweeted that the White Sox and DeJong came to an agreement. So the White Sox have their new middle infield. They have Paul DeJong at shortstop, and they just acquired Nicky Lopez from the Atlanta Braves. We talked about that in the previous podcast episode. So it's looking like DeJong and Lopez is the new middle infield. So let's discuss that and ponder what's next for the Chicago White Sox. And joining me is the managing editor of SoxMachine.com. It's Jim Margulis. And Jim, in our most recent podcast episode, we talked about how Chris Getz is attempting to achieve what he is laying out and what he is saying in trying to rebuild this team on the fly. Maybe we shouldn't use the word rebuild, reload, whatever we want to use in behind the word re. Whatever the White Sox are doing, he is achieving that, since now with DeJong in the fold, the White Sox defensively are much stronger up the middle than they were last year.
Okay, so first of all, do we call you Scoops Nelson now because of the DeJong news, which nobody credited us for? Well, Sox bloggers were good and people on the Sox Twitter, but yeah, did not register among the news hounds. Everybody's patting John Heyman on the back. Not that we're bitter. When it comes to the ultimate picture, though, of what Getz is trying to achieve, it's funny, like there's a rollicking discussion going on at SoxMachine.com, just very contentious, not among people, because generally speaking, by and large, our readers are very friendly people, but combating ideas in terms of, like, you know, is it a good signing or is it an okay signing versus is this a disastrous signing? And yeah, I can see the arguments for both. Yeah, I wrote about it in my quick little news recap, just covering that this is happening, is that it reminded me a little bit of last year, or 2 years ago with when Rick Hahn signed both Larry Garcia and Josh Harrison. And it seemed like signing one guy makes sense because you're kind of a utility infielder who can make contact and run the base a little bit, knows how to play the game. That's okay. But when you sign two of those guys, you're kind of doubling down on a profile that doesn't have a whole lot of upside and also has like the capability of disappearing on you if the medium contact does not go their way.
Oh, yeah.
So here's Lopez and the White Sox trade for him in the Aaron Bummer deal. And I'm thinking, like, okay, so I thought maybe it was either DeJong or Lopez, or Lopez, or DeJong is maybe free agency plan A, but then Lopez became available, or maybe the Braves said like, okay, we'll send him to you. We discussed all our trade opportunities at the non-tender deadline. This is the best we can do for Nicky Lopez here. Have him. And then that might say like, okay, we got our glove first middle infielder. Sorry, Paul, good luck in your search. But to end up with both of them, I think is a little bit iffy. Yes, it does. Chris Getz does, you know, make good, I guess, on his vow to improve the middle infield. But that's a lot of like no bat guys. If you have DeJong and Lopez in the lineup at the same time, if Corey Lee is like a catcher getting a prominent amount of playing time, like the bottom of the order is pretty bad. Like that's, you know, it bottoms out after like number six in the order. If it even goes that far, we'll see. It happens with Eloy. And then, you know, when we're talking about the heart of the order, if there is a heart of the order. So that's why, like, I don't know if I was ever bullish on DeJong, but I got it. I think when you first reported the news that the White Sox were pursuing him, like, okay, I get it, because whether he's playing shortstop or second, you want one veteran in the middle infield who knows what he's doing. I think you could try to get by with like Sosa and Rodriguez. And like, yeah, I mean, you're giving them the playing time, but if they're a mess, you're not doing them any favors and you're not doing your pitching staff any favors. So give them a veteran to play alongside, show them the ropes, help out your pitchers. Got it. But if they're both playing at the same time, like if this is their planned middle infielder and they're done.
Right.
That's when I think like, that's really, like to me, it would seem like Chris Getz's strategy is let's get the games over as quickly as possible. That means like, let's get the outs as fast as we can and let's make outs as fast as we can. And everybody will be home in 2 hours and 25 minutes. That's kind of how it looks right now. And I guess it makes sense if you're really looking to punt 2024 and really putting all your eggs in the 2025 basket, but it is pretty, it is kind of a bummer for a first, I guess not a bummer with Aaron gone, but it is like an unexciting way for a general manager to start his first year with like, we're just getting by this year. We are cutting salary. We're waiting some contracts out. And this year is more or less like, let's hope nobody gets hurt. And I guess, you know, shortening games is one way to lessen the risk of people being on the field longer than they have to.
A few things. One, I think when you have new faces in the front office, especially in the position player front, because I have to imagine Chris Getz is leaning on Josh Barfield. And Getz, being in charge of player development, knows what Lenin Sosa brings to the table, knows what Jose Rodriguez brings to the table, and Zach Remillard. If he doesn't feel confident that any of those guys should be starting games at the major league level, well, that's how he feels about them. And if Josh Barfield's backing that up, be like, yeah, based on my observations of those three, they are not major league shortstops. I think that kind of squishes or squashes any case for them, like on how much major league playing time they're going to get next year. Maybe they are the 25th or 26th guys on the bench and they rotate in and out when there are injuries. But I am not taking Lenin Sosa, Jose Rodriguez, or Zach Remillard seriously. I'm just not. Now, what I have been told by a source is that Paul DeJong is being advised to start learning third base. And I think that's another part of the equation here, because it's so easy to look at what the White Sox plan is that Paul is here to cover shortstop until Colson Montgomery is ready. And by ready, he is hitting at AA and at AAA. He is healthy, and his fielding with a healthier back improves vastly since the Arizona Fall League in the offseason, and let's say April through May. If Montgomery does that, then we're going to see Colson Montgomery probably in the later half of 2024 start getting his reps at shortstop, and then the White Sox have what they hope is their impact shortstop internally with Colson Montgomery taking over that position 2025 and beyond. But the whole DeJong having to get ready to play third base, which looking at his career numbers, he's never played in the major league level. I don't know what that says about Yoan Moncada. I think it'd be smart to tell DeJong to learn how to play third base, because Moncada hasn't played more than 110 games since 2021. He fell short of that number this year, and he didn't even play 100 games in 2022. We always like to say, if a player gets hurt, Jim, but we know better now. When Yoan Moncada gets hurt and goes on the injured list, and you think Colson Montgomery is ready to go, then you can move Dion over to third base. I think Dion may have more staying power than the White Sox fans in the comments section Sox Machine would like to hear for this upcoming season. Mm-hmm. But I do not see this as a long-term situation at all. This is to get through the 2024 season. And as you mentioned, maybe as quickly as possible and as least impacting as possible. And I think you can make that transition. The transition would be a lot easier moving someone who's not that attached to the franchise and like Paul DeJong. Then it would be like if you brought back Tim Anderson for $14 million. And if Anderson was still struggling and nobody wanted him at the trade deadline, I mean, how does that impact the clubhouse when you bring up Colson Montgomery and you supplant Montgomery over Anderson at shortstop? Like, I could understand, like, those conversations were probably had within this new White Sox front office. Like, how would this work as far as that hypothetical? And of course, we know what direction that they ultimately went. They saved $13 million. And they probably didn't even spend all that money in acquiring Nicky Lopez and Paul DeJong to take over the middle infield. So, yes, this is a very cheap way of addressing shortstop at second base. But if you are looking for a silver lining, it's the defense, Jim. Mm-hmm. Both DeJong and Lopez are going to bring a stronger defensive middle infield to the White Sox. That is needed.
Well, I'm reminded of the Pedro Grifol quote saying that he thinks the White Sox need more players who played the game the way Chris Getz played when he was like in full suck up mode and just like, well, yeah, Chris Getz is kind of getting Chris Getz-y guys. Nicky Lopez is very Chris Getz-y. You know, DeJong, maybe because he plays shortstop, you know, more than he's a true shortstop, whereas Lopez is, well, Lopez is a true shortstop too. Like, he plays a very good one. He was better known as a second baseman because that's where he happened to play with the Royals. But yeah, just it's a bunch of Chris Getz-y guys right now, which is, I think, very worrisome because, like, Kenny Williams was the same way. Like, Kenny Williams loved multi-sport athletes who, you know, with a chip on their shoulder, with, like, you know, strong personalities. And so, like, there is a case of, like, everybody feeling like, you know, the perfect player is the guy I wanted to be, or the best possible player I could have been. And so, like, this is something to be watching out for if you're trying to learn Chris Getz's habits. Also, you know, you saying that Montgomery taking over for Anderson directly kind of reminded me of, like, Tim Anderson taking over for Jimmy Rollins, like, kind of the passing of the torch there a little bit. So there is, you know, I think in this case, yeah, DeJong is disposable. You know, it's a good situation for him because, like, kind of like last year, he'll find takers because there's usually teams can use a middle infield glove who can occasionally hit a homer, and DeJong does that. And hopefully it doesn't go as poorly as it did for him with the Blue Jays and Giants last year, where he had a higher OBP or a higher batting average in OBP, and they both started in the low ones. So that's pretty dreadful. But yeah, there are a lot of signs here, especially like if he is playing third before Montgomery comes up. Like, if it's a case where it's like they somehow find a taker for Moncada, so DeJong's playing third, Lopez is playing short, and then like Sosa, whoever's playing second, like, then it's even kind of worse because you could probably find like a, you know, Heimer Candelario or somebody else that's like more interesting and more promising use of that position, even in trades, than you could at the shortstop level. So it's, I think the White Sox have not entirely painted themselves into a corner here by like locking up glove first guys so soon, but I can understand the apprehension of being like, oh, this is going to be really a low upside offseason if, you know, they're not even like exploring blocked prospects or guys who are non-tendered or, you know, through the trade markets, like a Dylan Cease. Let's see how we solve that position with what Dylan Cease brings back if they trade him, or Eloy Jimenez if they trade him. Like, you know, it, hopefully, and I don't see this being the case, but like, between DeJong and Lopez, one of those guys is a utility infielder type, like insurance in case Moncada gets hurt or in case you know, something weird happens at second base. But plan A is Moncada third, DeJong, I guess, at shorts, and then Lopez as a jack of all trades, caddy for a young second baseman, and that would actually be okay. But I think, like, if it is DeJong and Lopez, and then Getz is kind of like, you know, considering it done, like, and turning his attention to everything else, and I think that will be pretty disappointing for as much playing time as they could offer at those positions. Because even if Montgomery is going to be the guy, that's still 3 months of playing time that you give to somebody with more upside and probably more trade potential as well, if things went well.
Yeah, I don't know how viable it is for the White Sox to try and trade Yoan Moncada. Again, it's $24 million this year. There's a huge trust factor in his ability to play 75% of a season, not just play 150 plus games. Just like, can you play 75% of a regular season, Yoan? And you're not getting any younger, dude. You know, he's starting to exit out of his prime years and not taking advantage of his youth, in which you would, I think the White Sox wanted to see that. And Moncada's inability to play full regular seasons is part of the reason why Kenny Williams and Rick Hahn's plan failed, and they're unemployed, and Chris Getz is the general manager. So I'm still certain Moncada's going to be the starting third baseman. But if Moncada does have a strong first half, and you come up to the All-Star break, and the White Sox are way out of it, and a team wants to take on and Yoan Moncada and improve their third base situation, then that's where I could see DeJong shifting over from short to third. And then you give August and September playing time to Colson Montgomery so he can get his feet wet. So then you feel a little bit more certain, and he understands what he needs to improve upon before he takes on his first full regular season of the major leagues in 2025. I think that would be like a great result for the White Sox front office with the way that they're thinking right now. For Paul DeJong, before we get into other hypotheticals, because I could also hear people screaming, especially from the comments section, Jim, well, you could have acquired a shortstop if you traded Dylan Cease. We'll get to that in a moment. But Dan Zaborski, our best friend over from FanGraphs, posted on Twitter the Zips projected, so the next six seasons of Paul DeJong. And in 2024, the 50th percentile projection for Paul DeJong is a .211 batting average, a .279 on base percentage, slugging .388 over 394 at bats, hitting 18 home runs with 16 doubles, and an OPS plus of 82. So that means he would be 18% below league average. And his WAR total would be 1.1, a very low WAR total. But that is unfortunately like a 1.5 win improvement from what the White Sox had at shortstop last year. And Jim, I know you keep saying this. Yes, it is an improvement, but it's an improvement from the worst to very bad. And that's kind of what this signing is. I mean, technically speaking, the White Sox have improved at shortstop from what they got from Tim Anderson last year. And, of course, that introduces the whole debate of, well, maybe Tim Anderson would have bounced back, and maybe that would be a more worthwhile bet than signing someone like Paul DeJong. We don't know the terms yet. We don't know how much money Paul DeJong is getting. But I have been told that DeJong, and I think this has also been reported, that DeJong has his physical on Monday, and the announcement will be made at Guarantee Rate Field as he'll be visiting the stadium with his friends and family after Thanksgiving. So we'll probably get something more official in the upcoming days from the White Sox, but he will be at the stadium next week.
So two things. One, do you want to guess what his contract is?
Do you know it?
No, I mean, like, I'm like, want to put out guesses and like be hilariously wrong about him.
I don't know. Like, say 1 year, $5 million.
Yeah, I was thinking like 5.5, something like that. So
when you include Nicky Lopez's projected arbitration total from MLB Trade Rumors, which I think is like $3.9 million, the White Sox are spending $9.5 million on their starting middle infield.
And they'll probably get what they pay for.
More than one WAR, right? Yeah. One WAR is like $8 million right now.
So, yeah, I think my other concern with this, the way they've gone about it, is it does set them up to be, like, I guess, if Tim Anderson bounces back with another team, It does invite a lot of second guessing because they haven't used that playing time for somebody with more upside. Like I'm thinking like, you know, and we're talking about this as though the off season is set, but let's speak of this in terms of like, say that there isn't another shortstop coming in a trade or something like that. So this is their middle infield. If they have DeJong and they have Lopez and you're hoping for like one win above replacement, it does, you know, if Anderson comes back with the Angels or whatever team he signs with and like posts a 3-win season at second base, it's very easy to say the White Sox, like, why did you not bring him back when, you know, you got nothing out of DeJong and Lopez? You didn't even get trade fodder out of them. Whereas like, say in a trade where they, you know, acquire Joey Ortiz from the Orioles in a package for Dylan Cease. That's a popular one in the offseason plan project. Like that's a case where if Ortiz comes and he's not quite hacking it, you'd at least say, well, it was a worthwhile use of those plate appearances. Even if Anderson did outplay him, like we went with the upside option and the one that offered the best combination of production, team control, and payroll savings, and it didn't work out. Whereas this, it's like there is payroll savings, there is some defense, maybe quite a bit of defense if everybody holds their ground, but just the big picture upside and making the most out of these plate appearances really isn't there and can invite some easy scrutiny and second guessing of like, well, why don't you just bring back Anderson? And the question there is like, well, we're looking to cut a lot of money, which I think is that's, I think, what fans don't want is just like cutting money for money's sake and just providing nothing instead, because like the value of losing games, tanking completely, is really not what it used to be, thanks to the new draft rules, the lottery rules. So like there isn't even that anymore. Like chase all the losses. Like that's not quite there. So if you're looking for an entertaining product, this probably isn't going to be it and doesn't really offer a whole lot of upside for that. So if Anderson just continues to decline, then like everybody will forget about it and nobody will remember like just that this was an argument that was made in November and December. But for as long as like this is the middle infield and as long as Anderson remains unsigned, like there will be a wondering like, why didn't they just go, you know, one more year with the guy they knew and the guy who could be like a 4-win player just a couple of years ago?
That's a great question. And my response to that question is, I don't think the White Sox have the coaching staff to help Tim Anderson bounce back.
Yeah.
Like, I think he needs a change of scenery. So in your hypothetical, if he goes to Anaheim and works with Ron Washington, I would say congratulations to Ron Washington and his coaching staff. You could do what the White Sox could not.
For the second time.
Ultimately, that would be the best for Tim Anderson, right? Because it's not that I'm trying to be optimistic. I mean, this is more like, this is what I'm hearing. These sources seem to know what's up. This information becomes true. This is what the White Sox are thinking. So it's like news delivery. Yeah, this is not a very exciting team up the middle. And I think we have been saying it from the get-go. Like, the 2024 White Sox are not going to be very good. Now, Nicky Lopez had his press conference on Zoom, spoke with reporters that he thinks anyone can win the American League Central. You know, keep that optimism. For the 26 guys that are going to be in that clubhouse, keep that positivity. Go out on the field and try your hardest, try your damnedest to win the American League Central. That'll be fun as hell. This ragtag team shocks everyone and wins the AL Central by going 79-83. That might be the best case scenario for the White Sox in 2024. But if you're looking for long-term impact, there's just nothing there on the free agency level. And you mentioned Joey Ortiz. And I think we could transition here to what's possibly next for the White Sox. And if you listen to Monday's episode, Jim and I think a Dylan Cease trade is imminent. Bob Nightingale joined Chuck Garfine and Ryan McGuffey on the White Sox Talk podcast from NBC Sports Chicago. Nightingale gives it a 90% chance Dylan Cease is traded before opening day. And you got Ken Rosenthal on that new baseball show, Foul Territory, and he was asked to rank in order who is most likely to get traded between Corbin Burnes, Tyler Glasnow, Shane Bieber, and Dylan Cease. And he put it in order: Glasnow, Cease, Bieber, Burnes. And maybe you could have found your long-term shortstop or second baseman in a Dylan Cease trade. That is still possible. However, there have been conversations now for, what, a couple of weeks here? Maybe a week since the GM meetings before it ultimately got canceled because of the norovirus. But that doesn't stop GMs from talking. After all those conversations started at Scottsdale, Arizona, Jim, is it possible that Chris Getz is finding out that in whatever return that he can get for Dylan Cease, nobody is giving up their middle infield prospects? So the best that he could possibly do to address team needs in a Dylan Cease trade is outfield and starting pitching. Like, that's kind of what I'm wondering here, is that Getz is not getting a firm offer or getting anyone to wiggle one of these middle infielders, these top prospects, loose at a Dylan Cease trade. And that's why he ultimately decided to sign Paul DeJong, because this is the best that he could do up the middle.
Well, now I'm picturing GMs texting on the toilet because of the they don't stop working even when the norovirus is running rampant.
Exactly.
let's all pause and marinate with that for a bit. No, it's possible. That's why, like, I'm trying not to get too ahead of, you know, it's tough covering the White Sox the way that we do, and like the way they often fulfill, or I guess exceed would be the word, our worst case scenarios, or like our most cynical take. And then, you know, they somehow manifest that and then some. So like, I always feel a little bit foolish for saying like, well, maybe it won't be this bad by the time, you know, like, you always want to get that benefit of the doubt, especially the new GM. So that's why, like, I feel myself bouncing back and forth between, well, it's still November, winter meetings haven't happened yet. The White Sox have a lot of holes to where, like, you know, they can make 4 or 5 additions and it can feel like they haven't done anything. So like, this could be a shifting roster over the course of weeks. So, you know, I don't want to write these opinions down in pen or, you know, chisel them to stone and say like, this is a disaster, but I think you do have to be on guard for it. And I think that's more or less how I'm approaching it. It's just like, if the off season ends now, or if the off season ends now in this particular area of the team, this area of the depth chart, then, you know, I will be disappointed or I will be encouraged or whatnot. So that's kind of how I'm approaching it here. And yeah, I think we'll have to see when the deadline, or not the deadline, when the offseason comes and goes and we look at who moved, especially like if Glasnow gets traded, like that's probably a good comparison. Burns gets traded, like who went in those deals? And if the returns are pretty light, or if Cease is the only pitcher dealt because like nobody else, yeah, maybe only one team is offering like that grade of package for that kind of player, and the other team said like, I'll wait for a new market at the deadline, then you can maybe understand that, yeah, just the top prospects were in short supply at this time of the year. So I am holding off and suspending judgment a little bit, but I think as White Sox fans and as people who have covered the White Sox, you just have to kind of like Oscar Colas, you know, him being the plan A, you just had to be like, well, I guess that was our idea all along. And like, that's why I think you always, you know, as, you know, meatballish as it feels to be like, the sky is falling, or this is, you know, this is a disaster. Like, you do have to be always head on the swivel, ready for the outcome that, yeah, this was their best idea and they accomplished it in November.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
In his pre-winter meetings press conference, Chris Getz could look in the Zoom camera and tell everyone that covers the White Sox, this has been a very proactive offseason for us. We have acquired two new starting pitchers and a new middle infield. We have already accomplished that before the winter meetings. Technically, that is true. They did that. Mike Soroka, Jared Schuster added to the starting rotation, Nicky Lopez and Paul DeJong as your new middle infield. The White Sox have accomplished that. But what exactly have they accomplished with these moves? On paper right now, I think this is a 57 and 105 loss team. Like, that's just how I feel. Like, taking a step back from where they were in 2023 with their overall record. Like, don't get me wrong, folks. I think right now with the additions the White Sox have made, they're like a 105 loss team right now, and I think they'll be one of the worst teams in baseball in 2024.
I do like the theory that Treese proposed, saying that the White Sox are trying to goose their season ticket numbers by signing players or trading for players who are Chicagoland natives and thus have a lot of family that will want the tickets set aside for them. So basically, like, they're paying Paul DeJong $5.5 million or whatever you think it's going to be, and but like $30,000 of that money is going back into White Sox tickets for good seats on hold for his best friends and family. So yeah, I can buy that a little bit if this is the way it goes. Like, it's hard times for the ticket reps right now, so gotta figure something out.
Yeah, maybe the next move is the White Sox signing Sean Manaea, because he's from Northwest Indiana, right? He's another Valpo guy, like
Shark Tank,
like Jeff Shabarja,
or the Shark Cage. Yeah, that's
Jeff Shabarja. Yeah, that totally worked last time. Maybe that would be the White Sox big starting pitching acquisition, signing Sean Manaea. No, the one idea that I have, though, the one thought is, with the signing of Paul DeJong and having Nicky Lopez as your starting second baseman, does this mean your big free agent signing prediction for the White Sox, Whit Merrifield, is that dead, or is that still a possibility? And maybe
right field,
signing him for right field. I can't even say that with a straight face. Like, that would be...
No, former Royals are never dead.
What is dead can never die. Oh, man. If the White Sox signed Whit Merrifield, and he's the starting right fielder. I mean, just going around the horn. Corey Lee at catcher, Andrew Vaughn at first, Nicky Lopez at second, Paul DeJong at short, Yoan Moncada at third, Andrew Benintendi at left field, Luis Robert at center field, and Whit Merrifield in right field. Like, damn, that challenges the 2018 team for one of the worst opening day lineups in at least in recent memory. I mean, that would be really disheartening, but that would also be on par with the White Sox. And ultimately, you know, they can say whatever they want to say, but their actions are what ultimately matters. And right now, with the trade with Atlanta, well, like we said, they got $5 lottery scratch-off tickets, and they're hoping a couple of them cashes. And with signing Paul DeJong, this is a stopgap solution to buy time for Colson Montgomery, because they do not want to repeat the same mistake that they made last year in handing the job over to a young prospect, thinking that they're ready to go on game one, like with Oscar Colas, and then have that completely flounder and raise a whole bunch of questions about even Colas' long-term stay with the Chicago White Sox. Who knows? I mean, I don't think anyone should really seriously consider Colas as the starting right fielder. So what do you think the next move is for the Chicago White Sox, Jim?
Well, if they have middle infield set, which I think was the biggest issue, then I think it probably... I don't see free agency being a big help here. So it does seem like the trade market, whether it's Cease, whether it's Eloy, whether it's, you know, I don't think Moncada can be traded alone. It had to be like a package deal with a lot of money being sent some other way. But it does seem like trade might be the most, you know, unless it's like some kind of minor deal for a reliever or something like that, which I'm not really counting, but they could use a proven bullpen arm here or there, like a non-tendered guy. Major move, it's, I would guess, a trade.
Okay. You think the Dylan Cease trade could be next by the White Sox?
Yeah, or Eloy could be both. Like, just, you know, with the White Sox with Soroka coming in and Lopez coming in, talking about like how there's going to be a new attitude, or like how, you know, what the vision Chris Getz is trying to sell people on, like that would be the next step, I think, in trying to overhaul the roster and beyond just change for change sake. I think it would have to be that kind of fundamental trade for one previously considered a foundational piece, I think would be on the way out.
Okay. I think the mid-tier starting pitching market is going to move quickly, and it kind of has so far the beginning of free agency here. And I could see if the White Sox are to spend any cash on a free agent starting pitcher, I think we may see it in the next week or two. Like, and I joke and I say Sean Manaea, but it's probably going to be someone like Sean Manaea that they signed to like 2 years, $24 million to be part of the White Sox rotation.
Yeah, the one thing about Manaea, and I've thought about him before, is just like Bannister worked with him last year. So I wonder if he just might look at him and say like, I don't like this guy.
Yeah, that could be the case. Yeah.
Yeah, we tried and just couldn't figure it out. So,
and it does bring in the old friends. So we'll end this episode here and let everyone go so you can get ready for Thanksgiving and, of course, Black Friday shopping. Old friends, Ronaldo Lopez and Lance Lynn finding new homes. Ronaldo Lopez signed a 3-year, $30 million contract with the Atlanta Braves, and the Braves might try to stretch out Lopez to be a starter in the back end of the rotation, which is curious. And Lance Lynn signing with the St. Louis Cardinals along with Kyle Gibson. I guess that's the Cardinals approach here. I thought they were going to spend serious cash on top tier starting pitching, Jim, but no, they're trying to assemble the oldest starting pitching rotation in Major League Baseball. And I wonder if Rich Hill is next for the St. Louis Cardinals.
Yeah. I saw that from the Cardinals writers, wondering like, is this it for the rotation? Like, yeah, bringing in Lance Lynn to be like a back end starter, like they needed help up top and basically throughout the rotation. So like bringing in Lynn to start was like, okay, kind of get it. He provides innings. There is a connection there. You know, he's got some interesting fundamentals under his, you know, homer prone approach to where like, hey, he can still miss some bats sometimes. Pounds a strike zone. Maybe there's a functioning pitcher here, just needs some work. But then to double down, kind of like along the lines of getting Lopez and then DeJong, like doubling down on like a pair of pitchers without a whole ton of upside would seem to be troubling if there isn't that Jordan Montgomery or the, you know, Aaron Nola signed or Blake Snell, whoever's, they might have had designs on earlier in the winter. So there's that. Reynaldo. One, good for him, 3 years and $30 million. Yeah. That number surprised me initially, just because like I'm used to him getting paid like $3 to $4 million. Like that's kind of what he made through arbitration. Had a slow trajectory in his arb years because of just the starting pitching thing not working out. But when thinking about a little bit more, like he's had 2 years of being a good reliever. The White Sox, I'm not sure if you could say they mismanaged him, Pedro Grifol mismanaged him, tried an experiment with him that didn't work, which is like, you are our high leverage guy. You are our fireman. Every time you're out, you're facing the middle of the order, whether it's in the seventh inning or the ninth inning. And like even top tier closers don't face that kind of workload. Top tier closers always get the ninth, but based on like the average amount of batters faced, which is like 37 a game, oftentimes that's like 8-9-1 for a closer in the ninth inning. So like closers might get paid the most and they might get the highest leverage innings in terms of narrow leads and such, but they're often facing the weakest competition. Whereas Lopez had that leverage, but also the strongest competition. And so like every other outing or like maybe one out of three was just a dreadful one. And he put himself in a big hole 1 month in and eventually climbed out of it. Like he was very good after the trade, after like the trades, I suppose, because he went to two teams. So like throwing his year before and 5 of the 6 months this season, and that's basically like Kendall Graveman's track record. And the White Sox gave Kendall Graveman 3 years and $24 million, and they found a taker at the trade deadline halfway through. So like adjust for inflation after 2 years, 3 for $30 million, not all that unreasonable for somebody with Lopez's track record. If they can stretch him out, which I'm skeptical of, so much the better. Yeah. But, if he's just a good seventh inning reliever, the Braves basically have their entire lineup set. So they're at the point of like, how do we spend money? Relievers, I guess. So like, that's where the White Sox got it wrong was like, what do you need? Second baseman, right fielder, another starting pitcher. Let's just keep adding relievers. Like the Braves have pretty much all that set. They could use another starter, but otherwise like may as well add relievers because we have nothing else to spend money on. Must be nice.
Well, with Lopez now in Atlanta, I guess that means Lucas Giolito, right? Is signed with the Atlanta Braves.
Yeah. I mean, I want that to happen just because it's adorable.
I mean, he would have his friend Max Fried there, mm-hmm. depending on what kind of contract. That'd be kind of funny if that does come to fruition. But as we said in our previous podcast episode, the Dodgers are also talking to Lucas Giolito. So, yeah, be interested to see where all the old friends end up signing. But, yeah, Ronaldo Lopez to the Atlanta Braves, Lance Lynn to the St. Louis Cardinals. We're all waiting to see what's next for the Chicago White Sox. But so far, after the trade with the Atlanta Braves and signing Paul DeJong, technically speaking, the White Sox have their new middle infield, and they added two new starting pitchers to the rotation, Mike Soroka and Jared Schuster. So we'll wonder what's next, but we all want to wish you a very happy Thanksgiving. Have a wonderful weekend shopping online and spending time with your family. Jim and I will be back next Monday with the new podcast episode to recap all the news and happenings that happened over the weekend. It's going to be pretty busy, I think, on the MLB front all the way up to the winter meetings in Nashville in early December. And of course, we are very thankful for you guys for continuing to listen to us and help support us on SoxMachine.com, and especially for our Patreon supporters at Patreon.com/SoxMachine. If you just discovered the Sox Machine podcast, you can subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts, such as Spotify and Apple Music. We also upload our podcast episodes into our YouTube channel, which you could view those at YouTube.com/SoxMachine. If you do watch our videos on YouTube, please hit the subscribe button. We greatly appreciate that. You can also follow us on social media on all the platforms at Sox Machine, and you can follow me there as well at SoxMachine_Josh. For our Patreon supporters, if you are not a Patreon supporter, you can sign up at patreon.com/SoxMachine, where monthly plans start at $2 and you get exclusive content and all the additional perks as well. But for our Patreon supporters, again, Jim needs a headcount for our upcoming curling event in February. So this is the first time you're hearing about it. Go to patreon.com/SoxMachine and complete that form. And do you have a deadline, Jim, when you need those responses?
Probably by next Monday, I'm going to be formulating a plan just based on the numbers we got.
Got it. So do that over the weekend if you haven't already. And if you are interested, let Jim know by using the form on patreon.com/SoxMachine. And for those that are going to be signing up, you can sign up for as low as $2 a month or save with an annual subscription. The Sox Machine podcast is a production of SoxMachine.com. You're on for all things Chicago White Sox baseball and part of the Blue Wire Podcast Network. Alongside Jim Margulis, I'm Josh Nelson. Thanks for listening and watching, and have a great Thanksgiving.